Hey now, welcome to the Dirty Side of the Track, America's leading Formula One podcast. I'm Brian, that's Rob, that's Az, that's Nimrod, that's Lee. There's a lot of us here, Rob. Why don't you tell everybody what we're doing today?
Yeah, absolutely. We promised a trilogy of our season review and our Drive Hard trilogy. First one was me and Brian looking at stats. Second one was, what was the second one?
Second one was stats.
What was the first one then? I don't even remember anymore. But anyway, it was an amazing trilogy. But like all trilogies, it needs a third part. And the third part we always said was going to be a community listener type review. And we have Lee, Nimrod and Az from our Discord community. We have Rob Reed, who's been on the show multiple times. And we're going to take a look at the season, walk down memory lane, go right back to Bahrain 2023, and basically pull apart the season that was. I think that's pretty much it, isn't it, Brian? That's what we're going to do. Oh, we've also got 100 seconds of DRS to throw in at the end as well, because we had listener Craig on as well, which was fantastic to speak to him. And I want to get the momentum going on those again, because it was great to do that. We haven't done one for so long. So should we dive into news and social?
Let's do it, and let's do it fast so we can get to the conversation.
No, you can't. You can't rush news and social. This is for some people, this is the Reader's Digest of what's going on in the F1 world. You can't just dismiss it.
All right.
He tried to do this last week as well, just like running through the news.
Yeah, exactly. Lee's with me. He's doing this. Let's go, Rob. Start it off.
News and... Sorry, I went all Brian 100 seconds of DRS for a minute. Right. Okay, this only broke today or yesterday. Don't really remember this guy's name, but apparently the kind of the internet has reacted to it. Steve Nielsen has quit his FIA sporting director role after less than a year in the position. Basically, everybody in the F1 community seemed to pile in on Twitter today and say, look, this is awful. This is bad. I chopped something from the BBC website that said F1 insiders have told BBC Sport that Nielsen felt that the FIA was not willing to make the not willing to let him make the changes he felt were required to make its race control operations fit for purpose. That is bad. I'm going to be a guest. I'm going to be a host here, Brian. I'm not going to throw it over to your review first. I'm going to say, Mr. Reed, what do you make of that? Did you see the news? And do you remember who this guy is? And I'm throwing you right under a bus. Go.
Yeah, I mean, the FIA is basically having some challenges in general. They have since 2021. It's only gotten kind of worse since then. So, It's unfortunate that they've just got so many problems that it affects the racing the way that it does. So I did not hear the news, though. It's just this general commentary.
I agreed. I saw it as well, and I felt exactly the same. It's not a good sign, is basically the way I took it. And if they're trying to build any kind of structure and any kind of regularity and all the challenges they've had, this is not the right direction. Is what it is. That's the way I took it. At face value, at the most, it's just not good. It could be worse than that. Who knows?
I'm going to be completely honest. Like I said, I didn't even really recognize the dude's name. But the fact that there was like such a kind of like outpouring from all the various like proper journalists that follow F1, like not like us on this pokey little pod, like real journalists, all kind of steamed in and went, "This is not good for F1." But
it's too bad Nicholas Tsimbasis didn't weigh in. It could have been a third week in a row we used his name in here.
The other guy we don't know who it is.
I gotta figure out who that guy is.
On a lighter note, Christian Horner and Verstappen are on the BBC show, and they have definitely been told that they need to pave the way for a tighter contest next year to try to get everybody to tune in again and not just think it's going to be Red Bull domination. We mentioned it last week. They doubled down on it this week. Max said, like, the other teams are not stupid. They're all learning. The longer you keep the regulations the same, the closer it will get. We were lucky this year that we hit the ground running and had basically our concept worked. But I definitely expect next year, for sure, they will all take a step towards us. And Horner said, our engineers are seeing diminishing returns because basically we got it nailed so right straight out the gate that we haven't got much left to find. Lee, what do you make of that?
It's all a bit of a mix mash in there, isn't it? That's basically the best I can come up with, really, on that one.
It's definitely a media merry-go-round where they just kind of say, right, we need to build momentum for next year. Don't come out in any of your interviews and say, yeah, we're pretty much thinking we're going to win all of them next year. We're going to build a car that can win in Singapore, and then we're going to complete the set next year. They've definitely... they don't want to hear that news story this year because they've got to generate excitement for next season, I think.
Yeah, people are definitely they're just fishing for news at the minute, I think, throwing out whatever they can just to get interested back into the sport, and whether it's good or bad.
Agree. Speaking of stuff that's probably not even really news, but I'm not sure if it's a backlash or amazing marketing campaign, but we had Paul on the show and he was giving his reaction to kind of his new team name that he's going to be rocking under next year, which was the whatever it was, F1 Sauber Kick Dake Up the Backside Team or whatever it is. And they put out an Instagram post this week that basically said, is that our name? And like kind of put this kind of teaser trailer out there. But I'm not really even sure what to make of that one. I'm going to go and finish off the set now. As Nimrod, did you guys see this? Did you have any kind of reaction to it?
I saw they're going to be called Team Awesome Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.
Okay, so you didn't see it. Okay. Thanks, As.
No, I saw it, but I made nothing of it.
What about you, Brian?
What about me? I think they have two sponsors in there. And those names will remain because someone's paying for that. And so just reorder it is what's going to end up happening. Stake, Kick, Sauber. Lee's got a point. He wants to get in here. Go for it, Lee.
It's two sponsors owned by the same company.
Oh, it's the same company. They are. That's why they were interchangeable
Kick
last year.
Stake owned Kick.
So that's why when they were places where they couldn't have Stake, it just replaced with Kick. Okay. So maybe exactly. One or the other.
Yeah, okay. One or the other.
Interesting.
And finally, and in a big hitting news week,
this is for you. This is all yours.
This is mine because you know everyone knows I've got the man crush on Mick Schumacher and I want to see him do well in the sport. Well, Toto came out and said that he thinks that the WEC seat that Mick's got for Alpine this year should be really good for him. He said he's a good driver, deserves to be in F1. Well, give him a seat then, Toto. And he said, sadly, there isn't any place free at the moment. Mick going into WEC, which is a world championship with a constructor like Alpine, is great for him. I believe he'll do a great job, and that will possibly help him come back into F1. So I think it always makes sense to have your year away, or more than years away, be competitive somewhere. I think if you're just a reserve driver, I think that's a real hard gig to get back into being competitive again. So come on, Mick. I'm up for this.
You and you alone.
You don't want to see Mick come back.
I do. Actually, I was just watching a race from 2019. You'll hear Craig on the 100 Seconds of DRS giving me some tips about ways to make my working out indoors more exciting in the winter. I took the advice and I watched, and I cannot remember the race from 2019, fairly recently, and there was Esteban standing next to Toto, right, in his year away, or was it 2020? Regardless, you know my point, and his year away when he wasn't racing, and I'm happy he made it back. It's Mick, I feel, is losing that momentum. And with all the young drivers who aren't getting seats, I don't know if Mick's going to get that chance on the merry-go-round again. There's so many guys, the Porsches and the Vestis and the others, who have opportunities in front of them. We won't see a rookie this coming season on the grid. I worry about Mick ever getting a chance on that merry-go-round again. There's only 20 seats, 22 at some point.
Don't reserve drivers have a pretty good strike rate of coming back because they've been in and around the team? He'll get a shot. It's whether he can take it or not, I guess, is going to be the thing. It's kind of, we'll see. But yeah, that was all I found this week, really. It's slow news week. Everyone doing their final press commitments, I guess, before they all disappear for the holidays and the new year. So let's call that a day. We don't have a video vault because Brian was too lazy this week to do one.
As always.
No, sorry. He wanted to maximize our time doing a season review. Sorry. I knew I was supposed to say it differently, Brian.
That's what I said. Okay. I did watch 4 videos. I'm saving them for next week.
Ooh. Now, there's a teaser trailer. Right, okay. So we've got the Jedi Council assembled here to go back to the beginning of the season and brewing our way all the way through and try and look at some of the kind of storylines that we saw. We've thrown a few out to the guys in the invite, but we can completely freestyle this. If you remember something that happened over one of the races as we kind of step through the season, it's all fair game. So what we're going to do is kind of not go race by race by race by race saying, hey, do you remember this in this race? We kind of broken the season up into chunks and tried to remember some of the main storylines that came out along there. So let's get back in our DeLoreans and go right back to Bahrain. Opening round of the season. I'm kind of breaking it into the quarters. If we look at quarter one, races 1 through 6, we had Bahrain, Max won it, Saudi, Checo, Australia, Max, Azerbaijan, Checo, Miami, Max, Monaco, Max. And after Monaco, just as level set where we are here, Max had 119 points, Checo 105, Red Bull already had double the points of surprise outfit Aston Martin. So let's first take on the subject of, did people genuinely believe there was a Max versus Checo fight developing here? Because literally we didn't even have a race win between them after the first six. We all think this was such a dominant season by Max, but if you look at the first six races, there was less than a race win between them. So I'm going to go around clockwise and I'm going to say, Mr. Reed, try to remember where you were back then. We've got, like I say, less than 14 points between Max and Checo. Did you think we were going to see like a Hamilton-Rosberg title fight at this point?
No, I didn't think that at all. I was hopeful. Of course, I was hopeful that we would see that. And, you know, Checo is a good street course guy, so that helped him in those early races. But yeah, for me, I mean, I was actually in Miami. And, you know, when you saw Max's display there, like starting from P9 and just picking his way through. And then when he got up to Checo, who started P1, you know, there just wasn't even a chance. Like, it was just like gone. And then like he put, I forget how many minutes or seconds he put.
It may have felt like minutes.
It felt like minutes. You know, I left early. I left the race early. I was just like, all right, I saw what I needed to see. I saw Max just destroy the field. And from then on, yeah, you know, it was pretty much the Max show for the rest of the season.
Oh, you know, don't get ahead of yourself here. We're only up to race six at the moment. But okay, so that's a firm no from Rob that he did not see. He did not buy that Checo was in a title hunt. I'll carry on going around clockwise here. Lee, what about yourself?
Yeah, I saw it Max all the way, unfortunately. Checo, I mean, he's known as the street king. He's obviously won the street races. Monaco, he had best and bad luck with the little spin gate thing. And that just basically messed us up his own race, but no, it looked like a Max show all the way.
We're going to make it a full sweep here with the As household. I'm going to introduce you as one box because the two of you are sat next to each other, so you can fight over who answers next.
Yeah, you're being helpful if you've got anything else except for Max all the way. I think Baku was the first race I watched, which I couldn't attribute any bad luck for Max for the reason Perez won. It's probably the race first race I saw where I thought Perez is just outright quicker here. Every other Max win so far. Oh, Perez win. I always thought Max had a bit of bad luck, yeah. And Perez took his chance. But yeah, no, it was your optimism was lost.
Yeah, Brian? I didn't see a chance. Oh, As.
Yeah, you treat us as one. We'll manage ourselves. We're a happy family. I think even if you imagine that Perez has a chance, the ranking within Red Bull made it very clear in the past season that he doesn't have a chance, even if he does have a chance. So never a hope for, in my mind.
Yeah, so for me, I'm Brian. I'll go next, Rob. I was that guy. I was Charlie Brown. I kept running up to the football and Lucy kept pulling it away from me because I thought this could happen. Two wins, and Nimrod, you're totally right. Like, the luck factor did come into some of that. So you nail that 100%. But I was blind. I'm a Checo fan. I actually went back and watched as well him win the Bahrain short, the Sakia short race, and I love that. It was so cool. His first win in F1, I had tears in my eyes, or maybe it was sweat. I don't know, like George Russell, I couldn't tell what was happening. And so, yeah, I believed it. Two wins, and he looked competitive, but then Miami happened. And while I wasn't there with Rob, I watched it, and it was like this deflation. Like this, he just didn't have it. There was such a delta. It wasn't close. Like Rob jokes minutes. It felt like minutes. And they're in the same car. And for it to be that big a delta, I said to myself, uh-oh. I should probably stop running up trying to kick this football. So I think for me, the first few races, I was a believer. I was a Checo believer, and Miami, and I've said this a couple times on the pod, watching that was the no sir, it ain't gonna happen kind of moment for me. And from then on, obviously, you know, it proved itself out. But so my blind and ridiculous optimism was squashed in the South Florida heat. How about you, Vale?
So I don't think I let myself believe, if we're saying we're here after six races, I know Miami, he didn't have the best. That was the kind of I think that was the beginning of his failure to get into Q3 for a streak of like 5 races or something, wasn't it? Or something crazy like that. But I was looking at the points total and thinking, this only takes one DNF here or there. It only takes one bit of bad luck for Max, and they're in an obvious car that is head and shoulders above the rest of the field. So at this point, race 6, kind of thinking that we might have a little bit of a chance of a title fight. So I probably carried on running up to the ball a little bit longer than you, Brian. But before we kind of move on from those first 6 races, let's kind of cover the second story here then, as I kind of alluded to, is
right.
6 races in, and Aston Martin are sitting second in the constructors' title, and Alonso has, I think, almost been on almost every podium of the first 6 races. Probably not that many. I didn't fact check here, but there are a number in here. So let's go around the loop again here. But you got to be honest here. Did anybody see this happening? Because Aston Martin weren't amazing the season before. Anybody have Aston Martin down in P2 on their surprise bingo card for the F1 season after 6 races? So, Rob, you got to be honest here.
Oh, I mean, you could actually, you know, it's hindsight, right? But like, you can see it in Fernando's mannerisms, like when he made the switch from Alpine to Aston Martin during kind of silly season. And then you saw it in Drive to Survive, the way he kind of like looked like the, you know, the cat that ate the canary, like he knew something. Right. And yeah. I think what he knew is that, like, you know, Lauren said, like, we're copying in the Red Bull, so you're going to be fast. and it worked out. So, but no, I didn't see it, but like in hindsight, it makes sense when you kind of put the pieces together.
You are right there. You kind of got that kind of swagger of, you know, Alonso suddenly looked like a half a foot taller, kind of walking around the paddock. So, yeah, maybe they'd already kind of let him have a test drive of the car, and he was like, wow.
He knew something. He knew something. Yeah.
What about you, Lee?
No, I definitely didn't see that one coming. You say, looking back at last year, Aston Martin were horrible. And all of a sudden they came back. This amazing new car. Like, copy of Red Bull, we can understand. Why not copy the best team? I mean, that's what Pink Panther team did with
exactly.
Mercedes.
If you look at
a total surprise.
Yeah, and rather than just maybe ask the same question to the twin Asbots coming up next on my screen, let's maybe put it a different way. Do you think Aston Martin coming out of the gate fast that surprised you, or was it maybe McLaren, Ferrari, Mercedes really not coming out? I mean, they kind of seemed to just trip over each other. Did Aston Martin just make hay while the sun was shining?
I think so. I wasn't too surprised that they were more competitive. Preseason testing was actually quite indicative that they were quick. I think the surprise was that they were quite clear of Ferrari and Mercedes, because everyone was looking at preseason testing and going, whoa, they've got a quick car. But I don't think anyone was expecting to be clearly in second above all the others. So maybe they were underperforming.
No, I'm more surprised by the others. I mean, Merck were doing very well at the end of last season, kind of catching up. So you thought they're on a roll. They're going to pick up where they left. And they realistically went backwards quite a few steps. McLaren were dragging a bag of bolts for a while. So I definitely didn't see that to that level. I remember in the season predictions we did in the beginning of the season, I confused Aston Martin with Williams and said they'll do badly. And I said, no, actually, it's Williams going to do badly. But I never thought they'll do well. I thought they'll do okay. So, completely.
What about you, Brian?
So I'm with Lee. I didn't see it coming at all. And Rob, you're right. In retrospect, there were probably signs where and I don't mean Carlos signs. When you look at, for me, the Lance coming back from broken hands and wrists, and showing up in Bahrain, he's like, I'm going to race this car. He knew he had a chance to do something special, get points, do something, you know, be near a podium. And he's like, I want to capitalize on every minute, because his dad owns the team. If it's not like he's going to lose his seat. He knew that. He pushed because he had a chance to do something, and he wanted to maximize it. So I'm with Lee. I didn't see it coming. It was great. I will say this before I give it back to you, Rob, is the end of the year, right? The time of the season we're at now, the season's closed, the holidays are upon us. I like to reflect. And as we had our little questions here, which are kind of helping us think through some of these things, I reflected quite a bit. And you will hear me say the name Fernando Alonso so many times throughout the course of the next 40 minutes, because I did not realize I'm a Fernando Alonso, like, lover, fan, super fan, freak. I did not know that. I did not know that about myself. And as I reflected, the way Fernando in the first six races backed Lance, Lance hits him. Fernando goes, "Oh, that's fine. We're good. The car's great, guys." In Baku, Fernando's sharing brake bias settings with Lance, which made Lance go screaming off the track, you know, out of a corner. But Fernando's on the, he's on the blower. "I'm looking at the TV. Lance is doing great. Nice overtakes." Who was this guy? And so to me, that was one of my favorite stories, was watching the bromance, which is really not a bromance, but the Fernando storyline start the season and carry on through. So veil to you. But for me, no, I didn't see it, but I loved the Fernando aspect.
I'm going to be completely honest and say I was completely blindsided by all of this, because I was stupidly, even more Charlie Browning than you, Brian, believing that Ferrari had had a go at taking it to Red Bull last year, and then it was only really team strategy calls that had messed it all up, and a few driver errors, right? They kind of fell off a cliff after the break and Red Bull disappeared off into the season, but fundamentally car on car was pretty close. So Ferrari were just going to tweak their car the same way that Red Bull were, and we were maybe going to be, this is our year for a Ferrari championship. So as much as I was kind of didn't see Aston Martin coming, what I also didn't see was just how poor Ferrari were going to be. I mean, by race six, Red Bull have got 224 points. Aston Martin have got 102. Mercedes have got 96. And Ferrari have got 78 points. 78 after six races. It was just, I think I was more depressed by the Ferrari performance than I was by Aston Martin's amazingness.
With the chunks you created in the first quarter ending, did you still believe Ferrari had a chance?
Question? No. No, I mean, it just absolutely not. It was like, right, are Aston Martin going to be, are they going to stay there? Can they take the fight? You called it really early and said probably not. They're going to fall off a cliff. I don't think they fell off quite the cliff you predicted.
I don't get much right, but I did get that right.
Yeah, you did. You know, hats off to you. You did.
Most wrong.
But I didn't see Ferrari being able to pull it out of the fire. And if we now move forward and kind of look at the next six, any kind of any of us clinging to any type of title hope went. As we looked at Spain, a little race called Canada, that one sticks out on the calendar for me. I can't think why. Austria, Silverstone, Hungary, and Spa. Six races, six wins for Max. And we go from having not a hair's breadth between them after six races to after 12. Max has 314 to Sergio's 189. So we got a huge delta opened up there. And over on the constructor side, they've got 503, but all of a sudden, it's not Aston Martin in second spot anymore. Right. It's Mercedes. So I'm going to go. Should we keep going the other way, or should we want to mix the order up?
Actually, I'd like to ask a different question at this point.
Go for it.
For this quarter, though. So we hit Austria in this quarter, which is where I believe Lando first got the upgrades on the McLaren. And they had announced at the beginning of the year, they were pretty transparent, the bag of bolts that we thought they may be dragging around would at some point be fixed. Like, they'd made a discovery and couldn't get it ready before Austria. And then Oscar got it, I think, at Silverstone, and they were both, you know, on the podium positions for a good portion of the race. So we saw Aston Martin peaking early and doing really well, as we just talked about, and then starting a decline, which kept going for a while. And McLaren was just starting the uptake. So I guess I'd ask everybody, and in full retrospect, not just the quarter, but now that we're seeing the graphs switching, and I'm doing things on the YouTube, which no one can figure out, if we're seeing the one declining and the one increasing at the end of the year, which was bigger in your mind? Bigger news story, bigger surprise that Aston Martin started so big, but then kind of fell away, or that McLaren started so bad and then turned it around and became competitive at the end? And we're going to go in reverse order. So as I'll ask you first, your thoughts, and then Nimrod, then Lee, and then Rob.
I think the decline of Aston was, for me, the bigger surprise, because you expect teams to get better through the season, right? Everybody learns, everybody gets improvements. They're not always perfect, but to improve. And if you don't, at least you have some marginal. McLaren announced they messed up the car in the beginning. So they were dragging bag of bolts. And like I said, you expect them to get better. They're one of the oldest and best teams. So you expect them to bring their A game. So for me, it was a natural progression. It's Aston dropping was. I didn't see that.
Okay. Nimrod, how about you?
I'll take the opposite view. If you remember, Mika Hakkinen came out and said that right when McLaren was still P18, 19, he came out and said, in a few races, McLaren will compete with Red Bull. And I think I probably just posted that document in the Discord and said something along the lines of, what is he smoking? I'd like some of that. Because I don't think anyone thought this guy is being serious. He was basically saying this team's going from like 8th, 9th to 1st, 2nd. And it wasn't quite there, but I think the scale of the transition was what was shocking. For a team to go from basically at the bottom all the way to the top, I remember sitting there watching and thinking, why doesn't anyone else do this? Yeah. What have they done? This doesn't feel right.
Understood.
He's the intelligent one, by the way.
What about you, Lee?
Yeah.
Oh, Lee, you're on mute. If you, we got one of those classic. Oh no, you got nothing, Lee.
We will let Lee work on his technical difficulties and turn it to Rob Reed. How about you, Rob?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I think I'm going with McLaren. You know, it was great to see Fernando, on the podium in Monaco and just challenging with Aston Martin. That was great to see because, funny enough, I became a Fernando fan when he was at McLaren because I'm actually the youngest Formula One fan in this panel. I actually became a fan in 2018, so before Drive to Survive, but but definitely more recent than all of you. And you know, one of the things that got me into it was watching the Grand Prix Driver series on Prime, which is essentially the pilot for Drive to Survive. You know, it was about McLaren, 4 episodes. It was with Fernando and good old Stoffel Van Dorn.
Yes.
And so when I was watching that as I was getting into Formula One, because I just basically decided I wanted to get into this sport and became a fan of Fernando and McLaren sort of through that. And then they, of course, disappointed tremendously in that season. So I think it's just, you know, for a team with a history like McLaren, like you just, they should be at the front. They should be fighting for wins just because of who they are. And so for me, yeah, it was amazing to see them actually get back up there at the sharp end, and also to have a rookie in Piastri have a season like he did. So I think that, because I think that was actually one of the bigger stories of the season too, was like basically the best rookie season since Hamilton, is what Piastri just pulled off. And you obviously wouldn't have been able to do that if McLaren didn't give him a car. So absolutely, like McLaren for me, hands down, was like the best story.
Lee, how about you?
I'm going to come from both angles. To see McLaren go from a 6-7 stop race at Bahrain to basically coming up through the field was great to see. And with Rob saying that Piastri, he's got to be rookie of the season by far. His performances were brilliant. But to see Aston's downfall, they didn't just stop development, they went backwards. They literally went backwards in my eyes. And the fact that they had to come back with downgrades and that only made the car slightly better, that is quite telling of their development program.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean...
You go, Vale, and then I'll close out.
What were the numbers? Yeah. Wasn't it like 0.8 seconds a lap quicker is what McLaren... increase? Do you guys have the stats on that?
I don't, but what I was just going to say is, like, from my point of view, I'm going to go in the camp of McLaren surprised me more, just because I think we've seen teams come out of the gate pretty hot and then fall away a little bit, or not even fall away, just stay static while everyone else kind of develops and overtakes them. So we've kind of seen that quite often. So it's like Aston Martin, I was not as big on the whole they've fallen off a cliff like Brian was. I thought they'd just been overtaken by a couple of other teams developing, but they had fallen away. They weren't podiuming as much. look at like Lando and Piastri, like you say, first few races, it was 17ths and 15ths and 11ths. And every now and again, they claw their way and get a point. And it's like, this bag of bolts is just nowhere. And then, like Brian said, I think they strapped the upgrades onto Lando's car in Austria and he got fourth. Oscar was 18th because he didn't have them. Silverstone, they both get them. Second and fourth. And then that got proved not to be a flash in the pan. That was it. If they weren't in the top four or five or podium, and we actually started getting surprised that McLaren weren't at the punchy end. No, I don't think I've ever seen that happen. I'm getting old now, so my brain doesn't work very well, so my memories are going, but I don't really remember a team going from absolutely dragging their ass around looking like a bag of bolts to almost challenging for race wins. If it hadn't been for how dominant Red Bull were, they took a car from zero to hero in a season, and I don't think I remember seeing that for a very long time. Somebody will probably point out, oh, no, don't you remember season blah, blah, blah when the exact thing happened? But no, so McLaren absolutely surprised me way more than Aston not being able to maintain early momentum. But you asked the question, Brian, so what's your view?
Yeah, so last year in 22, when Haas came out of the gate and they had, I think, K-Mag finished fifth, coming in off the street, being invited back to drive like the day before the season. And everyone was excited, and it wasn't the first race, but they had, you know, all these points. And I was the Debbie Downer. Wah, wah. I'm like, they wasted a whole season developing this car. 21, they threw away so they could get the 22 car, and it worked. But you know what? The incremental development they won't have because they don't have a whole year to work on it continuously. They got to be able to keep their homework being delivered to teacher every week. And that was not something they could do. So I saw that one coming. This felt the same to me. This felt the same to me when it started. They jumped too high out of position, and the previous Aston Martins, they were scrappy, right? Lee nailed it. The pink Mercedes tracing point, and you know, you watch those races, they were the underdog who just kept fighting and getting a little better. This huge jump is awesome, and I agree with everyone what you guys said. I believe Lawrence Stroll told Fernando this so that when Lance crashed into him and sent him up, you know, as a rocket ship at COTA, and he was already on his way to the team, he's like, oh, no problem, it's fine, I almost died, pay me my money. And so, like, in my mind, I think there was some of that. I really do. Yeah, exactly. He knew what he was racing for. We raced for money. And so I agree that Aston Martin was amazing. It did feel like there was an opportunity for that cliff to be outdeveloped by other cars to happen, because just, we haven't seen them keep that up in recent years. So for me, it's McLaren, it's Lando, it's as Lee nailed, he had six or seven stops to fill up the pneumatics and all the air every couple of laps in Bahrain. And
they're not racing for anything.
Yeah, they're not racing for anything. You weren't racing for anything for seven races, bro. And then all of a sudden, he's got, you know, back markers and he gets anxious. I love Lando. I love Oscar. I love watching McLaren do well. It's fun. It's just fun. But there, as you say, Rob, I hate to agree with you, Vale, but the meteoric rise from six pit stops finishing 17th to challenging for podiums, and if it weren't for Max, and as Lando eventually got so bold to say,
it's always Max, he always ruins everything for everyone, you know?
Yeah, he ruins everything because Lando had a shot at wins, and no one would have seen that coming. So I
no
agree
one would
with
have
you.
Seen that car being capable of winning and actually feeling disappointed on a couple of occasions where he didn't turn it into a win. I just don't think I've seen a car go that way. And, you know, Aston Martin, I think some teams get unlucky in seasons where when you come out so great and then you've only got maybe limited budget or you've got limited upgrades available, if those upgrades don't quite work the way you thought they were going to, I think you're a bit screwed. And the fact that they became downgrades, that was their kind of stick or bust moment in the season. If those upgrades had kept them punchy up near kind of McLaren and Mercedes, we might have seen Aston Martin finish stronger. I don't understand how they... All this technology, I said it to Paul on one of the episodes we had with him, is I still don't quite understand how it seems to be such a kind of a fingers crossed. We don't really know what's going to happen when we strap these upgrades on until they actually hit the racetrack. It's like all the CAD diagrams, the wind tunnel timing, it all obviously goes to point them in the right direction. They think this concept works, and then they bolt it onto a car and go, oh God, take them back off. So I don't understand that, but whatever. Okay, then we move through to, I know which one we're going to talk about here probably in a little bit more detail, but we had the we come from the break, I think, or sometime around here, we had the Dutch Grand Prix, the Italian Grand Prix, Singapore, Japan, Qatar, and Austin. Most of those were won by Max, and he secured the title in Qatar. And by this time, I'm not even sure I need to read the points out because it's lots and lots to not many for Max at this point. Over in the Constructors, Red Bull can take the rest of the season off and sip pina coladas and have probably already nailed the Constructors title. But it's starting to get a little spicy. All of a sudden, Ferrari have woken up at this point and gone, oh, well, we're racing this year. Oh, sorry, guys. We didn't realize for the first part. And they'd suddenly started getting a little bit... They weren't even feisty. They were never really challenging for much. But they just seemed to be, as a pair, aggregating more points. And suddenly we got Mercedes on 344, Ferrari on 322. And maybe we've got, I think we were probably all clinging at this point to best of the rest was going to be the battle that we were all going to look for. So,
Didn't we have two poles in a row for Carlos?
Yes.
Am I remembering that right? Italy
and
Singapore.
Didn't convert them into anything amazing, but...
Well, he won Singapore. I think everybody knows that.
And, I mean, Ferrari on pole at Monza is, you know, that's an amazing pole to get. Like
That radio message when he, tell me we got it. Tell me we got it.
Yeah.
Is it quite as good as a window?
No, obviously not. I mean, like a Ferrari win at Monza is the next best thing to winning the championship.
Yeah. You become a legend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And therefore, you disappointment for me.
Yeah, it was disappointing. But Sunday, that was the story, I think, for me of the season, was exciting, amazing Saturdays and disappointing Sundays.
Well, that's a great, let's use that. So race or story of the season, because Rob hinted at it, and Rob Vail, again, twice in a row is right. A lot of people point at Singapore as the race of the year. I'm not saying it's mine, but having a non-Max winner and having him not be competitive gave us a whole different feel for the top of the order. And the story of the year, Rob Reed, I'll turn it back to you since you started. Is it the way the Saturdays meant something because the Sundays were going to be Max? Was there a race that stuck out for you, like a Singapore or others? Like, what was your kind of story or race of the year for you, Rob?
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely the Saturdays. You know, so I think for me, probably starting in Monaco, which I would actually say I think is the best qualifying I've ever seen in Formula One. And even though I've only been a fan since 2018, I've actually watched a lot of races. I've gone back and watched, you know, pretty much every race in the turbo hybrid era. And it was just, I mean, you had Alonso on provisional pole, then you had Verstappen on provisional pole, then you had Leclerc on provisional pole, then you had Ocon, then you had Max, you know, then you had like Alonso again, and then like you had Max. It was the most amazing qualifying. And of course, like Monaco is just kind of known for being, you know, the action happens on Saturday and then the processional race happens on Sunday. So that, you know, that was amazing. You know, you mentioned the Monza, having Ferrari on pole at Monza, Zafosi just going nuts. I mean, that's just one of the things that we live for in Formula One. So that just started in Monaco, and then I, you know, it just kind of kept going, and which, you know, was great. It's like, I mean, can you imagine if like Max got all the poles too? How boring the season would have been.
I mean, I agree with you saying that. That pole lap from Max in Monaco, I think, still ranks as one of the best pole drives I've seen that has also shocked me the most, because I think he went through sector one and sector two as, was it green or yellow? He wasn't setting the fastest lap. He was not on for pole going into sector three. And everyone's like, oh my gosh, it's whoever it was going to be, whether it was Alonso or Leclerc or whoever was holding
it was Alonso.
Okay. And everyone's like, great news story, real feel good factor story that Alonso's going to get pole. And Verstappen's blown it because he's not quicker than Alonso through one and two. And that third sector, how he turned those twisty little roads of Monaco into temple of speed, just nailed those last two corners, was just, that's just chef's kiss. That was amazing.
Yeah, Lando had, I can't remember what race it was. It might have been Spain, where Lando was on provisional pole and we were thinking, you know, it could happen. And then Max, of course, I think, you know, Brian, you played the quote, you know,
he ruins
Max
everything.
Ruins everything. We were like, oh my God, Lando's on pole. And then, okay. Well, at least it was fun. Right.
What about you, Lee? Was it all
in the next day of the race? Yeah. Then, you know, Max just runs away with the race by, you know, too much to, you know, for him to even sweat.
What about you, Lee? Thoughts of Saturday versus Sunday this season, and where did Singapore rank in terms of your enjoyment of races this year?
Saturdays were definitely a lot more enjoyable than most of the Sundays. That said, Singapore has to be race of the year because you've got not just Max bidding it, within his performance, you've got three drivers within 1.3 seconds battling for the lead. That hadn't happened the entirety of the season. It was just super fun to watch. You just didn't know what was going to happen, which is what you want with racing.
Yeah, and, agree.
With Max, when you're just winning every other race of the season, pretty much, you just knew the outcome of every other race. But Singapore, we all knew Red Bull doesn't perform well at Singapore for some reason.
I agree. And what about over in the Asen-Imran world? Did we all overreact to Singapore just because it was the first time we'd been starved of so much battle up the front? I mean, I'm not even sure. I haven't even gone back and watched it to find out if it really was an amazing race. But what do you guys think about Singapore?
I think our expectations were that low. I think for about 80% of the race, nothing happened. You just had Carlos Sainz driving ahead of Leclerc, who was being asked by Ferrari to slow down. And then the Mercs pitted for an alternate strategy. But I remember Ricciardo trying the same in something like 2015. Of pit and then try to just bolt on soft and go for it. And I think when they did that, I said, yeah, this doesn't work in Singapore because it's just too hard to overtake. And so it was amazing at the time, but I watched like 5 laps back after, like a month ago. I thought this is just dull, driving around slowly in circles.
And I remember messaging Rob Vale about this during the race and he disagreeing. And I think as usual, Rob was absolutely wrong. So.
Vale, defend yourself if you like.
Well, no, all I'm going to say on this is that, first off, I think Max was just so brilliant this year that we had been starved of battles for the lead. So as soon as we got one, it just instantly showed us what it really kind of highlighted, and I think we said it on the pod, was we've been really, really trying to talk up the best of the rest. Oh, isn't it great that we've got Mercedes and Ferrari and McLaren and Aston Martin? We don't know who's going to finish second step on the podium. Let's ignore how brilliant Max is because he's just different league. Ignore that. Let's look at how exciting best of the rest is. And we kind of started to convince ourselves that best of the rest was a really good competition to be watching. And then Singapore came along. Agree that maybe it won't stand the test of time of being the best race ever, but in its context where it was such a good feeling to be watching a race going, I don't know who's going to win. And I haven't said that for 12, 15 races or whatever it is. So just it just had that whole, we were wrong. Best of the rest isn't as good as this. This is a battle for the lead. Inject it into my veins and give me this every race. But we only got it once in 22. So.
Rob, you sound like somebody who never had a chocolate and just tasted vegan chocolate, okay?
It depends. If you'd have had given me proper chocolate all season and then give me a vegan chocolate, I'd agree. But if you'd been giving me twigs to eat all year and then gone, here's a vegan chocolate, I'd have gone, chocolate, so amazing. It's context, Az. It's all context.
You're welcome.
Go on, Brian. What did you think of Singapore?
So I enjoyed it, but I think Nimrod's onto something here. I kind of got swept up by the wave. I'll say this. I had three races, and I won't tell you my favorite because we haven't gotten to the fourth quarter of the season yet. Singapore was my favorite at that point by the end of Q3 of the season. Australia because of the carnage and the chaos, I enjoyed Australia more than I should have. It was the NASCAR fan in me that came out and loved Australia. When Carlos Sainz got a 5-second penalty and went from like fourth or fifth to last because of a restart with one lap to go, I mean, that is the ultimate kick in the Sainz to have something like that happen to somebody. I like, it was just everybody was, anyway, so I went Australia, and then I did like Singapore more, as you said. I liked the idea that he was trying to drag Lando around in his DRS to fight as an extra layer of protection, and George says, I can take the whole world, and went straight into the wall. I mean, like, these are the things that I did enjoy in Singapore. It was fun to watch.
Was Singapore the race when Ocon put out the battle cry to the Haas team and said, "Tell them I'm coming." And then proceeded.
I can't remember which one it was
when he proceeded to spend 17 laps behind. Behind them, but it probably wasn't.
It's where Carlos made a, you know, basically a joke of DRS, and basically said, like, "I'm just gonna kind of keep him in DRS, not for passing." What it's intended for, but so that the person in third couldn't overtake, right? Yep. And Rob Vale and I can kind of take that one offline. But yeah, it's just another example of why we don't need DRS anymore.
I don't know about that. I will say this: my favorite moment of the season also has not arrived yet. It's in the fourth quarter, so I'll hold on to that. But Rob Reed, thank you. I hadn't really thought of this season's worth of dichotomy from Saturdays to Sundays. I do love a lot of the Saturdays, and we've talked about this. The Monaco qualifying is so special. It's so risky and dangerous. It's one lap for everything. And if, like Leclerc, we've seen where he bends it and then you don't race the next day and you could have been on pole. So it is high stakes, big jeopardy. I much prefer Saturday at Monaco over Sunday at Monaco, unless you get like a tsunami situation and then Pierre Gasly's going like a lunatic through everybody. But, you know, that doesn't always happen. So, yeah, I really hadn't thought of it this way, of the value of quali this year being so high. So appreciate that. That was good.
So then we come to close the season out and we do Mexico. Oh, God, that was bad. Brazil, Vegas, and Abu Dhabi, and obviously all Max wins. There's a few ones in here to unpack, but I'm going to start with the biggest worry that I had. I'm not sure if Brian did as well, but that was the Star Spangled Banner flying above Vegas. We'd all seen it coming after it had been announced that, oh my God, this is going to be the cringiest, awful thing. We might all die of cringe while we watch the intro to this race, and it's going to be the worst thing ever. The racing is going to be terrible. It's going to be the, if you take what you think is the worst Americanization of something you can possibly think and times it by 100, it still won't be as bad as what Vegas is going to give us. And maybe I'll keep my powder dry. Maybe I won't. I'll intro. It wasn't. It was actually pretty decent. And even pit lane Paul said, coming out of Vegas, they'd all gone into it going, oh my God, I can't believe we've got a race here. This is going to be an absolute cluster. And every single one of the people that he spoke to, and including his own view, was actually kind of looking forward to coming back here next year. It wasn't as bad. So let's start with the American guest on the panel and say, Rob, Vegas, where did you land on this? As bad as you thought it was going to be, better than you thought it was going to be, on the fence? What's your Vegas view?
You know, the thing is, like, I went into it with, you know, pretty much suspending judgment. I was very optimistic. I was very excited. I love Vegas on its own. I love Formula One. I was really excited to see them come together. But at the same time, you know, I mean, they pulled that thing together in 18 months. So you had to think, like, you know, something's going to go wrong, like, to actually pull off what they had to pull off, racing on the strip. This isn't just like racing at a track outside Vegas. Like, they had to transform the city. So I chose to kind of like suspend judgment and go in with open eyes. But at the same time, you know, I was actually texting with Pit Lane Paul ahead of it. And I mean, and so now I have that as a record of just how insanely negative he was. And I'm sure that was shared in the paddock. I think that's like the entire paddock went in, this is going to be an absolute, you know, crap show. Like, they were thinking, like, you know, looking at the weather, the track was going to be so cold at midnight, you know, that it was going to be an ice rink, it was a new surface, all these things, you know. And then everybody's, you know, all over the fact that, like, they didn't sell out the tickets, they didn't sell out the hotels, so they were being discounted. So everybody was calling that a disaster. And yeah, and in the end, I think comparing Singapore with all the other races is kind of like apples versus oranges, right? Because Singapore is the only one that Max didn't win, right? So if you take that one out, I think Vegas was the best of the rest of the entire season. For a number of reasons, there were 99 overtakes in Vegas. Only like 50 of them were actually televised. That's the most in a dry race since China 2016. The most overtakes of any Formula One race.
They weren't all DRS easy passes either.
No, not at all.
Actually, Vegas got the DRS zone pretty well, good as far as I was concerned. That was an example of when DRS gets you into the danger area for an overtake. It puts you into the braking zone and challenges you to try and see if you can make the pass. It wasn't a, oh, look, there goes somebody on the straight because they got DRS. So
And nobody had ever driven the track before. I drove it on the sim, which was interesting while I was in Vegas. And I mean, you are in eighth gear forever on that straight. Like you hit eighth, you hit the limiter, and you're just basically like chilling, you know, like just waiting for the
Bellagio, Planet Hollywood. See you guys.
But so the overtaking, and then like I would say moment of the season for me was Leclerc's last lap pass on Perez for second place at the end of that straight, like doing, I think he was like a tad under 220 miles an hour. Homeboy hits the brakes and does like 7 G's of deceleration force to make a pass, right? That means like he didn't lock up, like the tires had to grip at that freaking speed. Like that was, and I was watching with a bunch of Aussies and like, of course, you know, the dirty secret of going to Formula One races that you end up watching them on TV while you're there. And so that's, you know, I was with a bunch of Aussies and we were on the strip, but we were like watching it on TV and it was amazing. We went nuts. And then of course he goes through to get second, and yeah, man, Vegas was it. And the funny thing into is that like everybody was criticizing it before it even happened. And I called out Verstappen in my Forbes piece because he called the thing 99% glitz and glamour and 1% sporting event before he'd even driven a lap of it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. No, he did. He
and
kind
then
of,
he wins and now he's singing Viva Las Vegas.
Yeah, that was, yeah.
Yeah, he did go through a little bit of a character evolution. Let's put it that way. But so what about,
great way to put it.
What about you, Lee? If we kind of pick up on maybe say, as the first non-American that we're going to ask here, the view from abroad is always that America ruins all of F1, right? Now, at the moment that the manhole cover comes up and destroys Sainz's car, are you already kind of thinking, oh God, what's Vegas going to do? And then talk us through, what did you think of the actual race itself? Did it redeem itself?
Yeah, I mean, that manhole cover was a bit of a disaster. And it's all to do with the Nevada state law. They're not allowed to weld down. Yeah, it's a Nevada state law. They're not allowed to weld down the manhole covers. That's why it got sucked up. That and the fact that concrete around it just got destroyed by it as well. Yeah, it wasn't a good look for him to start off the weekend. The race actually was very good in the end. And it pains me to say that a little bit because I had been playing the F123 game with that track on it. And we've been calling it the upside down pig for months and months and months. And we thought, no, it's going to be horrible. Turn five is too tight. There's going to be no grip. But no, it was a very good race. And yeah, kudos to that last lap pass. That was a fantastic thing to watch. Thing of beauty, that one.
Over to the Azrael window there. Who's going first out of you two?
You want me to go first? Because yeah. I'm going to be contrarian.
Oof.
Oh, yeah, do that. Okay, so the last few laps, great. Yeah, there was suspension. There was great overtake. I mean, good. We're pinning it. Appears to me like we're pinning everything on one good stroke of the pedal to brake. I was really focused on the sphere. I really enjoyed the sphere. And
me too.
And you know, the things I enjoy about racing are things like blind corners. And you don't get blind corners on a flat race. Okay, you go to Spa, you go to Silverstone, you got blind corners, you got ups and downs. Yeah, it was okay. The ending was good, but.
Ooh, controversial. Nimrod, come on, save us. Give us a view that you loved it from that household.
Yeah, I was not.
We didn't chat about this before.
No,
this is...
I wasn't as enthusiastic about it as others. I think for how low our expectations were, again, for this race, based on how boring the track looked, it was better than expected. But I watch Formula One, not NASCAR. I'm here to watch cars go around in corners quickly at high speeds, not to watch them go down a 30-second straight at 220 miles an hour. So
you don't like Monza and Spa?
No, because I think those are more interesting. Have a bit more character.
Oh, you see, we got a little bit of American. Monza, we got anti-Americanism creeping in here.
How can you put anti-Americanism on me, right?
Okay? Not you. You know me.
Not 17 years, right? This is my own son, right? I taught him well, right?
So, I love Kota. I think Kota is one of the best tracks on the calendar. But I think Monza has a lot of character and history.
Okay. Here's a good one. I like that anymore. So we went the other week. We were talking about like yet another street race. Like the Madrid thing drives me nuts, right? Because it's not Formula Street. I'm actually all for proper circuits. You know, there's enough proper circuits in the US that are just below F1 grade. That rather than go and spend lots of money on building a brand new street track, just upgrade some of these to be raceable. Like Kota shows you can have a great race. But why does history make up for a boring race? And this is the little bit of me that kind of thinks like, so sometimes some of these newer countries, and usually the criticism is directed towards America, but it's not always, a new country comes on, and because it hasn't got history, either it has to be the world's best race ever, because otherwise a lot of the fans won't let it off the hook, because, well, historical races are okay to be boring because they have history. And I'm not sure I can go with that one.
I think it's because not the fact they have a history, but they have a good history. That's the difference. So you know that something good can happen there. You know,
Monaco stays because?
Because of, right, this is a kid show and I can't say things.
And I'm being facetious. I am, because I love Monaco and I want it to stay. But it isn't the best race.
I don't.
Monza Monaco, is okay. No. It's not. Monza doesn't usually have the most overtakes either. It's good, but it's almost an oval. If you want to go the NASCAR route, it's really just a massive
that's,
oval.
That's one of the reasons we get like random winners at Monza too, is because it's just not that challenging of a track. So like you get like a Gasly winning or...
Ricardo. McLaren.
Yeah, at McLaren, it's just not a very difficult track to drive.
He said Monza, not me, just saying.
I didn't think.
Man, Monaco stays because of races like the 1991 Formula Grand Prix, Manzo and Senna.
I know, but 1991, as much as it pains me to say, isn't that recent.
Well, speak for yourself.
Like I said, I am being completely facetious on this and just kind of just trying to spark a debate, because I would not take Monaco off the calendar. It's just that I want to see, if new races are added to the calendar, I want to see them prove themselves as being a good race. So if they give me good racing, they can stay, but a lot of the street tracks don't. Vegas, I will say I was wrong. I thought it was going to be a boring race. Did have a lot of overtakes. Maybe that straight is too long and there is too much full throttle there, but we saw a lot of overtakes outside of just the DRS zone on there. But I just don't want to see this tale of more street tracks coming true.
So I loved Vegas. And I don't know if anyone listened to the pod, and I don't want to be the resident American who's all,
Vegas, baby, Vegas!
But to me, like, it was good. And yes, I'm with all of you. It looked terrible to start. Lee, you nailed it, man. Like, you couldn't have had a worse start to a weekend, and the fan situation debacle where they had to leave, and the whole way, and the racing at 4 a.m. Are you kidding me? I mean, that is a ridiculousness. And the teams were upset. Nothing was going right. Ferrari would have to start near the back, and it would cost them because of the grid penalty, which was not their fault, but there's no way around it. And so, you know, it was just all set up for a horrendous race. I love the Sphere. I want more Sphere. I want a Sphere at every racetrack that F1 goes to from now on. If they can find the money, I don't care if it's $2 billion a Sphere, more Sphere. Number two, in my mind, is Vegas, I thought, delivered. And I liked it. It was cold. And the concrete, or the asphalt, I should say, was hard. And it was like ice. And you had to have technically sound driving. And I did think there weren't that many straight line overtakes with DRS. It set you up in the braking zone, and sometimes people didn't see other people coming, and there were, you know, tangles and collisions, and I enjoyed it. It ended up being my favorite race of the season. Now, I will say this, a huge grain of salt, not just because I'm American, because my expectations were so friggin' low after the weekend up to that point. Anything short of an epic disaster would have been a success. So, like, give me a second year to watch it. But I enjoyed it very much. So I liked Vegas. I thought it was really good. And in this quarter, though, now that we'll get to, like, moments of the year, if we haven't hit them already, because two of you have talked about Charles' overtake on Checo as being, like, a big moment, an overtake of the year. I respectfully disagree. And I would say it was Brazil. And I would say it was the Fernando Checo battle. And here I am again talking about Fernando F. Alonso. I don't even know what Kimoa is, his brand thing. Is it clothes? I don't. I have to go buy some
sunglasses.
Now. Sunglasses? Well, I'll wear a pair next time because, I mean, like, I couldn't be more all in on Fernando at this point. And I've never been a huge Fernando fan until this week preparing for this conversation. I thought he was great to start the year, a great teammate. He was reinvigorated. He brought fun and humor back to the paddock. I loved seeing him pushing Lewis a bit, you know, and making him uncomfortable, but still embracing him as a champion. And the way he respects Max is because Max is a generational talent, and Fernando obviously gets that. But that battle between Fernando and Checo in Brazil over those last five laps or so, three laps, was tremendous. And they both were interviewed, and Fernando said, "You have to give Checo a lot of credit. We battled to the limit, and I knew he would be a fair racer, and I knew I could put my car there, and I knew he would respect that." And I hate, again, seeing Checo come out on the negative end of this conversation twice, but if that's not the theme for the season for Checo, I don't know what the hell is. So to me, my favorite moment was the Fernando Checo last few laps Brazil. I loved Vegas too much. I'm a fanboy at this point, but give me till next year until my like opinion is fully formed. Like a child's brain, I'm not really so ready, so give me a little
Are
time.
You regretting the naming of the podcast? Because I don't know if you remember, and I'm not sure we've ever even spoken about this on the pod before, but just before we were Dirty Side of the Track and we were throwing around some names, we had the iconic image of Alonso sitting on the deck chair, and we were toying with the idea of kind of using that silhouette, and we were going to be called the F1 deck chair because we were just going to give a view from the deck chair. We weren't real fans. I'm sorry, we weren't journalists. We were going to be sitting in our deck chairs watching the races. So we were very nearly the F1 deck chair, and you could have had an Alonso silhouette as your logo.
Rob, if I'm so dumb it takes me 2.5 years to figure that out, that it means something to me, it wouldn't have meant anything at that point. So no, it doesn't. And I will say this, it also makes our awards next week, just as a teaser, we're still going here, but as our awards next week, the Dirties will be handed out at the end of 2023, and that's a better name than the deck chairs. So
true.
Yeah, with true. That, so I'd love people's
you go ahead, I would have loved if his Fernando Alonso's brand was of deck chairs. I was waiting to put that joke in until Rob came in with a history lesson.
Yeah, and then Lee told us it was sunglasses. Well, now I have to get a pair. I hope they have a cheap version because I'm gonna buy a pair. Are they really expensive, Lee? Do you know?
I haven't looked them up.
Okay, well, if they're really expensive, then I won't have any, and I'll just take a pair that I have and write Kimoa on the side. So what about everyone else? Like, moments of the year, if we didn't hit it already, anything we didn't highlight that you want to highlight that you look back and say, holy moly, that was the moment of the year. And I'm leaving it open, so just jump in if anyone has one that we didn't hit, because I know we hit a lot already.
For me, it was those overtakes between Fernando and Checo. I mean, it's not a moment, it's a series of moments, but
yeah,
in what I consider an extremely dull season, that was a highlight.
Yeah, I loved it.
Go on, anyone else? Don't be shy.
I'm gonna go with Daniel Ricciardo on his return. Yeah, really missed him on the grid for the first half of the year, and I think we got used to him being back pretty quickly, and his race in Mexico where he got a 5-second penalty and basically did the same thing as he did in Russia many years ago. He just said, "I'll just drive faster to make up for the time." It was very, very good fun to watch.
You know, while we go around here, we chat a lot on the Discord, so plug for the Discord. And I was honest, and I remembered I had made a prediction, speaking of AlphaTauri, that Yuki was going to be outpointed by Nick DeVries. Whoops-a-daisy. That one didn't work. I love being honest, man. Not only was I so wrong, the dude I was saying was going to do better didn't even have a seat after a handful of races. I mean, I couldn't have. You couldn't have.
As wrong as me.
What was yours?
As wrong as me. Do you remember what my bold prediction was? I wasn't really bold. I said that Yuki would be outscored by DeVries so much he'd be out by the end of the season. Which I was so wrong.
I do remember this.
I went all the way around the world and I was so right.
I do remember this now. Thank you for acknowledging that I wasn't the wrongest.
What about you, Lee? What's your favorite moment of the season?
I think my favorite moment actually has to be Oscar Piastri's sprint win.
Oh, yes.
Take a mine. Yeah, I'm with you. Tell us why, Lee.
simply because, I mean, he really deserved that win. It was really well strategized. He raced absolutely fantastically. and it's basically what makes him my rookie of the year. And I think the other thing I got to mention is my prediction of George being unstoppable from the preview show also went a bit south, but I'm still holding up hope.
I love the honesty. I love the fact we're all calling ourselves out for making some boo-boos, because that's really what a fan is, right? Someone who has fun enjoying this and chatting about it.
Rob Stroll, third best driver on the grid.
Yeah, you nailed that one. Stroll, third best driver on the grid. Man, we are full of great... If anyone's still listening to this at this point, they know they should turn it off, right? I mean, we are all wrong.
Rob, say, what was your favorite moment and anything that you were completely wrong about as well?
Well, my prediction last year was that Logan Sargeant would score a point. So
he did, by default.
Because of the skid plate controversy. Right. Like, and he came close a couple times.
He had a lot of 11s, I feel like.
Every time. I think actually Logan had a pretty good rookie season, all things considered. It's really hard to pick. I think they've all, you know, the two overtakes, the Leclerc, the Alonso, and the Piastri, you know, winning the sprint race, like those three all just stand out for me. I probably couldn't even think of a fourth, because, you know, it's the kind of season we had.
If I think about things that made me smile, I'm not sure I can say they were necessarily the favorite. So Piastri winning the sprint race, just Piastri in general all season. I think I may have developed a new man crush, and that Mick is in trouble now, because Piastri just thought carried himself so well all season. I think there was the interview where, because track times were being deleted and they were interviewing him, and he's like, well, you might want to give it a minute because I've got to make sure I've actually got pole, because he just had such a dry sense of, like, a rookie. He's supposed to be under like the most intense pressure ever going, because he's got to make sure he can secure a seat for next year. The meme that they did when, who was the crash that he turned to the camera and he kind of went and did that face, and he was just brilliant all year. Oscar Piastri, my absolutely loved him to bits, and that sprint race was fantastic.
It was water off a duck's back.
Water off a duck's back, exactly. Alex Albon just not caring how bad that Williams was supposed to be and saying, yes, screw you, I'll show you, hold my beer. There were so many moments this season where I just smiled at watching Alex just put that car where it shouldn't be. And actually, we already covered one of the other ones. I'm not sure if it was a smile or a, oh my God, I don't know what I've just watched, but it was Max's pole in Monaco. It was just, I knew how wrong I'd been about 10 seconds ago. Like 10 seconds ago, I was absolutely all in on Alonso being pole, and there was no way. He's just done two yellow sectors or whatever it was, or he's down by 0.2. You don't make up that amount of time in Monaco. It's unheard of. You can't do it. And in his interview afterwards, where he talked about he knew that he could hit one of those walls at a certain angle at a certain amount of pace, because that would be the fastest line through there, but there was a high risk of just basically binning it. And he's like, yeah, why not? No point leaving anything out on the track. Let's just go for it. And he was just in a league of his own all year. We've already said that. He was just absolutely unstoppable. So, but yeah, away from that, Alex and Piastri were just kind of my feel-good moments of this season, although Leclerc's overtake in Vegas was amazing. Can we all agree that Abu Dhabi is a terrible race, though?
Absolutely.
Yeah, 100%.
If you had to go round, if all of you had to take one race off the calendar, right, let's just pick, everyone always wants to bring either Portugal or South Africa back. Let's say that we can take one race off the calendar and bring one of those in. Let's go around. Rob, which race are you dropping off the calendar?
Mexico.
Ooh. Lee.
Monaco.
Ooh.
Spicy. Nimrod.
Monaco.
As?
So before we asked about a moment and everybody gave three moments, so now you're asking about a track, so I'll give three tracks.
Okay.
Monaco, because the glitz and glamour don't do it for me. Abu Dhabi and Jeddah. Just can go with.
Did we miss you on? Did we not give you the moment to do the best moments of the season?
You said one and I stuck to the rule because that's a kind
of guy. Okay. That's okay. As long as that's fine. That's fine. Brian, what are you dropping?
Man, this is a really hard one. I want to say Mexico because it feels like a snooze fest all the time, but I just would love to see, like, I love the stadium, and at least it has some redeeming quality to watch on TV. And I also photoshopped the sphere in there with a sombrero on. So, like, it has opportunity, $2 billion and a big sombrero, and we're all in. I would never get rid of Monaco just because of Saturday. I think it's Abu Dhabi. They changed it in 21 to make it better racing. It still sucks, and it's the end of the year. It makes it, it's more offensive to me that they force, because of money, force it on us to close the season. And I stand by my top-notch analogy that it's like watching your beloved get on a train and they rip a big fart before they leave. That's what the end of the season is. It's Abu Dhabi. It's a big-ass fart. No one wants, and like, all right, well, I guess I won't care that much. I mean, that's to me.
We're all keeping Paul Ricard, right? We're all happy to be
that's the no, one that's off. Bringing
stays
it back.
Off.
Oh, yeah.
Stays
oh, that one, that one got dropped last year. That's fine.
Yeah. Oh,
my gosh. I thought you were joking.
I thought you were joking too.
For me, I look back over the episodes that we did, right? And the three that we really ripped on that we basically said that we slept through were Abu Dhabi or Abu Dhabi. Mexico delivered us another Siesta Fiesta. And Hungary was the one that I was massively wrong on, that I thought it always gave us amazing racing. But Pit Lane Paul basically went, no, it's just Monaco, but not as good.
Monaco were runoffs.
Yeah, Monaco runoffs. Yeah, that's all it is. And I thought it gave us much better racing than it didn't. And then I look back on last year's episode, and we'd all beat up on it there as well. But it's kind of pretty. You know, scenery is okay. Mexico's got the funky little baseball stadium. So yeah, Abu Dhabi. They're just it's
and Monaco. So. But I think the panel has voted for Monaco, Mexico, or Abu Dhabi. It feels like one of those three, right?
Is this kind of this should just have to race old cars in Monaco. They should have to race like 90s era cars.
Oh no, little smart cars. That's what they should have to race around Monaco, like no, tiny little two
or old F1
little
cars.
Cars.
The cars are just way too big for Monaco. That's the problem. I mean,
yeah, when you have to actually do a 3-point turn to get around the hairpin, you know the cars have got too big. But
it's not just Monaco, right? That's part of the problem. The cars are too big. They're starting to make them a bit smaller, but actually they should chop them harder. It's a barge.
Well, as you'd be proud to know, last week we did a review. We found out the cars will be 10 millimeters narrower. And
centimeters. What? Centimeters.
Oh, 10 centimeters narrower. Oh,
that's
Rob
quite
Vail.
A bit bigger.
It's this or this is what the boop, boop, boop. That's the difference. There's no difference. 10 centimeters is, you still can't put two cars next to each other in any of those corners. So as I'm with you.
In the same way that the cars have grown gradually over the years, they're not going to suddenly go, right, everyone's got to drop 2 feet.
They
off
haven't
the car.
Been
that's
growing by only
happen,
10
right,
centimeters. So. Yeah, they come back 5 feet wider. They're like, we went from like little cars to tanks in like 4 years.
Look
just
what
be glad
to
we
the
don't
wheels.
Race in Macau.
All right.
Just the wheels this year just went.
Yeah, well, you know, we've got 18.
Well, they're dropping
now.
Those. They're going, I think, wasn't it? They're going from 18-inch to 16-inch, aren't they, next year?
Yes, but they're expanding well, the sidewall year, but... to just make it just as big. No, I'm kidding. I don't know. I think they actually are.
Yeah, just be glad we don't race in Macau.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Just to put a bow around the season review, because we do sometimes get accused of not giving him enough credit. And I think it's just because it got a little bit boring to just keep trying to find superlatives to talk about Max.
We did a whole episode about his
I
stats.
I know, we did a whole episode. We tried to show that we weren't being biased towards Max, because we're not, because I think he's absolutely brilliant. But let's hear it from you guys. So where would you individually rank this in terms of champions you've seen in the past? And if we have to put you on the spot, what do you want to do? Will he win it next year, or do we see how many championships does he win before he retires?
Next year.
Let's go for the latter.
Next year. Yeah. No, let's just do how
well,
many.
Next year is probably everyone knows he's going to win it next year. So let's say, okay, how many does he win before he calls it quits? And we will go clockwise and we'll put you on the spot straight away, Rob. So rank him alongside what you've seen before, and how many does he win before he calls it quits?
Rank him alongside the all-time greats?
Yeah, just a champions you've seen, or you have enough kind of background knowledge of of other champions along the way.
Oh, I mean, again, it's so difficult because every other great champion has also had worthy teammates. I think that's my big problem with Max. You know, I mean, Senna had Prost. I mean, the two best drivers on the grid were competing against each other on the same team. And that's happened time and time again. That's just kind of like how it shakes out. Red Bull is just an exception there. They want to have one great driver, a Vettel or a Verstappen, and then one support driver, a Weber or a Perez. And it's such an apples to oranges comparison as a result, you know, or Rosberg versus Hamilton. So, okay. So I will not compare for that reason. I cannot compare Max to the other greats. I think Max is definitely the best of his generation. The bit of driving he did in Japan last year around turn one blew my mind in the wet. Like, he just freaking sent it around turn one with tons of water, no looking back, no hesitation, and just stuck it. And I was like, this guy is superhuman, you know, when it comes to driving a Formula One car. So I don't know that any driver in history has been better than him in terms of just pure skill. I mean, the guy is the closest thing to an F1 robot that you could get, I think, in terms of how he's been brought up and raised and his heritage and so forth. So that's what I'll say on Max. I have tremendous respect for him as a driver. I just, you know, again, can't compare him because he doesn't never had a worthy teammate. And I also just don't think he's an amazing driver. I don't think he's a great champion. That's just kind of my opinion.
How many does he win? Like, how many does he
stack? He does five and then, you know.
He does five and then calls it quits. Yeah. What about you, Lee?
Well, he is one of the greatest drivers of all time. I will say that. Don't like the guy personally, but he is. However, he is not the greatest champion. Greatest champion has to be Schumacher, in my opinion, followed by Ascari. He comes third or fourth in my rankings as a great champion. Greatest car combo with driver, yes, I will say that. But then the car is built for him, is it? We'll see.
Controversial.
Yeah, controversial. But yeah, I mean, he's going to be a good champion for a couple of years more, I think. I think he's going to win at least two more, and then everyone's going to have caught up a little bit better. He's going to have a bit more challenge. He's going to crack under pressure.
Ooh, crack. So you're calling five he's on three now, right? You're going to think he's going to win two more?
Yeah, I'm going to call him at five total.
Five total? Okay, Nimrod, where are you lying on this one?
I think Max wins probably three more until the end of his current contract and the end of 28. And then calls it quits and goes into endurance racing because he's, I think, very openly said that he wants to do that kind of thing. So I don't see him doing a Fernando Alonso and being there until the age of 45. And on the discussion of teammates with Max, there was a random YouTube video I ran into where this guy built an Elo system for F1, similar to chess, where if you beat your teammate, you get more Elo. If you're much better than your teammate, you get slightly less Elo. Maybe I'll link in the Discord because it was quite interesting. But Max third all time behind only Fangio and Alonso. Because Alonso had to fight off quite good teammates, like Sir Button and Hamilton.
Nice. That's one for the video vault coming up, Brian, I sense.
Definitely.
Asmundo, what are we saying?
I won't be much contrarian. I'm very much with Rob Reed with a slight adjustment. A great champion needs to have a great adversary. I'm not necessarily a teammate. It's easy in Formula One for a teammate because of what car, etc. Max had none. Last year was a little bit, so he's an amazing talent. I agree to the point he ruined the season completely for us. And you can only do it with great talent. But until we see a real battle where he has to grit and achieve through adversity, I can't rank him against the tops. How many does? As many until he gets bored. And I think that's a factor. If he gets bored next year, he'll quit next year. I don't think he's got the passion.
Next year? You don't even you think there's a chance he doesn't even see the new regs in?
No, I said if he gets bored, and I think he might get bored. That's the thing. If he doesn't get a competition, he might get bored. If he gets competition and gets to win, I think it gives him more longevity, and then he can win seven, right? And then he goes for the biggest numbers because he can. He's got the talent, I think. But if he doesn't get competition, he'll quit earlier.
Rob, you give us your view, and then I will close us on this and introduce 100 seconds real fast, because I have a note I want to share as we transition to 100.
I'm going to... Oh, it's going to pay me to agree with As. No, no, maybe I'll... who else talked about adversaries? Maybe I can find somebody else to agree with apart from As. But anybody ever seen the film Megamind? You know, raise your hand on the Discord if you see Megamind. Okay. Megamind's sole plan is to defeat... I can't even remember what his name is. He's the ripoff of Superman, right? He just exists to beat Superman. And when he finally does... doesn't have a reason for being anymore. He doesn't have an adversary to go up against, so he ends up creating his own superhero that he can then try to fight against. And I think you're right. I think look, Max is absolutely brilliant, and Adrian Newey is an absolute brilliant car designer, and the two of them together, perfect blend of man and machine, and I don't know that we will ever see a car and a driver dominate a season like we saw this. I don't think they will repeat it next year. I think there will be a few extra winners. I think Red will probably dominate still, but it might not just be a one-off Singapore. There might be a couple of others thrown in there as well. But you have to prove your mettle against somebody else. It's if I go to my favorite sport outside of F1, it was Ronaldo and Messi. In tennis, you know, it's Djokovic and Federer and Nadal. You need the big hitters to kind of see how you measure up. And we're just in an era at the moment in F1 where there are definitely a couple of other drivers that have the skill, but just don't quite have the machinery underneath them to take it to him. And I just love to see Max go head to head with like a Hamilton, Alonso, Lando, George, Piastri, any of them in almost equal machinery even, and Charles and Sainz, obviously. Any of those where one of those cars can come close to being a match with that Red Bull machine, and if Max then still fends them all off, absolutely hands down, he'll probably want to be ranking up there as one of the best champions I've ever seen. But it's just so hard without the Megamind to go up against.
Metro Man
was the guy, yeah. You know, Metro Man and Megamind, you've got to have your adversary to go up against.
Want to name? Any others you think he needs to race against? You name the whole grid.
Even if Logan Sargeant gets a Red Bull equivalent, right? Just have team. Someone.
Well, he did have that in 2021 with Hamilton. And, you know, I would say that he actually became a better driver in that season. Hamilton was like, it was back and forth. I mean, and they literally came to blows, yeah. Right? So, like, he leveled up. As a result of that season, and then went into 2 years of absolute domination off of that. But like when he was racing against Ricardo, when he was his teammate, like Ricardo was a better driver than him. Ricardo was doing better. So if you like watch his progression, like since then, I think it took a leap in 2021 when he was actually being challenged.
Yeah. I agree. And it's unfair to judge Max like this because it's not his fault. It's not his fault that the rest of the grid don't have cars that can bring it to him. It's not his fault that Checo can't bring it to him. He can only do what he can do, which is drive absolutely brilliantly and win almost every single race. So soft to him. He's been amazing. To get into that kind of Hall of Fame, like the greats, you want to see that he's gone more than just the one season with Hamilton. You want like a few, if he wins like 3, 4, 5 more championships, you want some of those to be littered with those kind of real wheel to wheel, I'll show you who's got the biggest kahunas type situations. But, well, go on, Brian.
Didn't have a quali lap where he spun it around and still continued to go forward and kind of like didn't
Coda,
even blink?
Wasn't it Coda? Yeah, just, if I remember right, in the S's.
The skill is amazing, right?
Yeah.
There's no way to doubt that.
Yeah,
I know he did that in Turkey a couple years ago as well.
Yeah, I just watched that where he was right behind Perez in the pink pant in the racing point, I think, and he was trying to pass. Maybe I'm wrong, but I know exactly what you're talking about. And Lee, thank you for bringing up Ascari. I think we're going to look at a list of champions, and I'm not going to give a number on total championships, but I think we're going to see the Ascaris, the Prosts, and the Fangios in a grouping. We're going to have Max and Lewis in a grouping. I put Senna and Schumacher personally in a grouping, and then I have Fernando Alonso above that because I love him so dearly.
What an idiot!
Yeah, I'm an idiot. And then of course, the greatest. No, the I we can talk about that in another episode. The greatest champion of all time has been on this podcast.
This is Valtteri Bottas, and you're listening to the Dirty Side of the Track.
He is number one. I gave the stats. I mean, it's obvious. And so on that note, the fact that we had Valtteri on this year, we'd be remiss to not highlight that. And we had these amazing panelists on today. Stick around for one more minute. We are going, though, to listen to the 100 seconds of DRS. And we were so lucky to have time this week to catch up with Craig. Craig, as you'll hear, is a super fan now, but his transformation from learning about F1 and becoming a super fan was even faster than Rob Reed's, maybe. So, Rob, you'll have to listen to this. It's a lot of fun. Craig, thank you for joining us, and here is 100 Seconds of DRS with Craig. All right. We are super excited to have Craig, Dirty Sider Craig, F1 superfan Craig with us on the Dirty Side for the 100 seconds of DRS. We haven't done the 100 seconds of DRS for a few episodes, so it feels good to be doing all this, having Craig on and having this conversation. Thanks for joining us, Craig.
Thanks for having me.
So,
and I'm going to apologize because I'm blatantly, there's no such thing as, is it Craig or Craig?
It's Craig. Craig with a K. I introduce myself that way every time.
Wow. Okay. So I'm going to apologize if I butcher it and call you Craig, because we don't have that equivalent in the UK. So I'm just going to naturally slip back into Craig. So apologies up front. Okay.
I don't even know the difference to what Rob said, but whatever. So we were chatting before this, and Craig has a great origin story about his F1 fandom. And I think a lot of us kind of have like some COVID fuel to our love of F1, but I think it is actually the actual origin. So Craig, tell people a little bit how you found Formula One.
Yeah, so it started for me just with when lockdowns happened and all of sports basically came to a halt. I had started an exercise routine, and as part of having a young family, the only free time I had to exercise was early in the morning. And I was flipping through the channels one morning, and happened to be a Friday morning. I came across free practice and heard Crofty and Martin Brundle, you know, working their way through free practice, and had heard of F1 and saw live sports happening, and my interest was piqued. And so I just was just interested in continuing to follow that, and kind of through the exercise routine I was doing, I was habit bundling and doing things I wanted to do with things I needed to do. So kind of got hooked on F1, and exercise kind of became the thing that I had to do, with Formula One the thing that I wanted to do. So it stuck.
And just to jump in there, you might be the first person that we've ever had on this pokey little pod that when we've kind of talked about an origin story, you actually got hooked on free practice. Now, I mean, that doesn't really happen too much, right? Because normally people happen to be flicking channel surfing on, say, the Sunday morning and catch a race, and then we've got the excitement of the race. But F1 got you in free practice. I mean, I could take my hat off, but my headphones will come off with it. So hats off to you. That's awesome.
Yeah, no, it's just it was live sports. I was kind of starved for something to be happening on TV that I could watch. And it just happened to be the first thing that I could find. And so it really did grab my attention, and I was hooked.
But although if you're a Nebraska football fan, you haven't seen a lot of live stuff happening on TV in years anyway. Hi-o!
Definitely not worth watching, that's for sure.
So then, you know, you start in COVID and you see this, and you kind of keep this idea going of watching in the mornings. And it sounds like it was great for you, as I've often talked about. The timing of the European races on a Sunday is fantastic.
It really did, yeah. Having a young family, my kids would sleep in just long enough so that I could at least start the race early in the morning, and then sometimes they'd wake up in the middle of the race. Usually I'd let my wife sleep in, I'd get my girls up, and I'd take care of them while I was watching the race. And usually the race would be over by the time my wife would get out of bed, and then we could kind of go on with our day. And then you're done watching your sporting event 9 o'clock Sunday morning, and that's, you can amazing, go about the rest of your day. So
yeah, that's amazing. And then how did you become like an even more super fan of F1, you know, from there? Like, is there a team or a driver or an aspect that got you hooked, or just was it just, as Rob said, free practice one and away we go?
So it really, from that first free practice, then after that I started watching the Drive to Survive series. And then when I had caught all the way up on Drive to Survive, so that was 2021 or 2020 that I started watching, I then started listening to a bunch of podcasts. And I think currently I listen to about 15 or 16 different F1 podcasts.
Wow.
Wow.
I listen to all of them on about usually on 2x speed. So you guys sound like you're on barbiturates right now because you're talking so slowly. I consume so much information about the race, and I got really into the technical aspects of it, into the like strategy aspects of it. So there's just so much about F1 for every type of person, whether you just want to watch for the wives and girlfriends part, whether you just want to watch for the drama of who's going to crash into who, whether you want to watch for the technical stuff for like your engineers who are into aero design and brakes and tires and all that kind of stuff. There's a little bit of something for everyone.
So, I mean, obviously we're at the number one position of those 15 that you listened to, but
we are now.
How did you stumble across us then? Was it just kind of just, you're just consuming everything? You're in an F1 feeding frenzy and we just happened to show up? How did you find the Dirty Side?
You know, I will be honest. I was kind of just subscribing to pretty much, I was searching Apple Podcasts for pretty much everything F1 and was just like giving everything a try. But you guys were, I like the way you guys bicker. You guys remind me of me and my brother and the way we fight. The way you're just like, okay, you're wrong. It's fine. You can just sit there in your wrongness and be wrong. Let's move on. And let's
so we're clearly talking about Rob being wrong. That was obviously
sure.
Let's, yeah, see that sure. See that dismissive sure. That, we all know totally. Brian's wrong. But anyway, I've found a new co-host here. You can leave it now if you want, Brian.
That sounds good. So I do want to highlight one thing that's very important. Craig is currently wearing a Dirty Side t-shirt. So I think that is tremendous. But speaking of gear, and I'm going to try to get to 2X for this. Craig grew up in a place called Greeley. Greeley is a place called Hatworks. Hatworks is Greeley. Hatworks is a big famous place that Paul went to when people named Paul wore a Greeley hat. So I don't know if that made any sense. That's going to be worse on 2X.
I can't wait till he listens to it when he's exercising. That goes to 4X.
So Pit Lane Paul, when he was on recently before Vegas, had his hat from Greeley, Colorado?
Correct.
Yeah. Greeley, Colorado. Greeley Hatworks. It turns out Craig grew up there and knows a lot about Greeley, obviously, and Hatworks. And I'm like, wow, what are the odds? So would you mind sharing a little bit of your Greeley story, but also the Hatworks piece? Because I just think that's, Paul touched on it briefly, but maybe not. Maybe he didn't know the special place that Hatworks holds.
Yeah, so the Greeley Hatworks is a company that's been operating in Greeley for off and on for about 120 years. And they specialize in all kinds of hats, but particularly your traditional cowboy hat. And as Paul was describing, they make the hats for the characters in Yellowstone. That's kind of their newest claim to fame. I was explaining to Brian earlier that they have made custom-made hats for about 24 A-listers, everyone from George W. Bush at his second inauguration in 2004. Wow. They've done for Peyton Manning, Aaron Rodgers, Miranda Lambert. I think Jimmy Fallon got one. Wow. Lady Gaga. They have done... for like several organizations as well. They've done like custom a beaver pelt hat. So they do like all of these really cool things, and they've really become like a ingrained in part of like the community of Greeley. Yeah. And one of the things that they do every year is they participate in the Greeley Independence Stampede, the world's largest 4th of July rodeo and celebration. Wow. Which is like a 2-week rodeo and celebration thing they do around the 4th of July in Greeley. And they have like a booth out at the fair, and they sell thousands and thousands of cowboy hats out there every year. So it is like, it's a big, big deal in Greeley. So when I heard Paul talking about this hat he bought in Greeley, just north of Denver, I was like, I know that place. I was like Will Ferrell in the Elf. I was like, I know that place, the Santa Claus, I know him.
So, didn't he get a custom hat there as well? Was he saying that he got, does he join the list of A-list celebrities?
No,
then
Paul, we said Paul did.
Yeah, that's what I just said. So Paul, he's on the A-list celebrity list then. So he's up there with the folk that was just named. So wow.
Well, now a dumb question, because I thought the hat was awesome. I don't have a cowboy hat. How much does a Greeley, like if I walked in and picked one off the shelf that they made, are we talking $200 or like $400 or like $50? I have no clue.
They have a hat for every price range, from what I understand. If you go in for the hat fitting experience, that's going to run you some.
Probably more money than I have.
It's north of $1,000, from what I understand, for the full fitting experience. But yeah, they definitely have a hat for every budget. So
I think this is on my list.
If you find yourself in Greeley, Colorado, make sure you stop down at the Greeley Hat Works. I am not a paid spokesperson. I just know of the Greeley Hat Works.
Nice. Well, obviously, you know, Greeley, the hats, your time in getting an F1, free practice one, the fact that you love Nebraska football, I'm very sorry. Obviously, you know, the 100 seconds of DRS is a big thing. And I would say this, Craig deserves a little shout out. Rob on this podcast said we are at 199 Instagram followers. We needed the 200th. And Craig walked over immediately to his phone, bink, followed, and then saw the note about joining the 100 seconds of DRS, which I quite frankly think all Dirty Side listeners should do, so we can meet the Dirty Side communities. But thank you for doing this, Craig. The 100 seconds is next. And I'm very sorry to tell you that I'm asking the questions. So if you think I'm slow now, just wait till the question portion starts.
I was kind of just thinking, though, that you probably do sound a lot better when the 100 seconds is sped up to 2 times. So,
but do I sound better or do I sound normal and the person answering the questions is going too fast?
I'm not sure. I mean, I'm not going to be counting to see if you better your average of 13.7. But I am going to be counting. Joking aside, I am actually going to be counting because I'm running the timer. You're running the questions. So all I have to ask, Craig, are you ready for 100 seconds of DRS?
Let's do it.
Brian, are you ready to painfully read the question slowly and maybe freestyle and actually change the words to not be the questions as are written down?
That sounds perfect.
Okay, right. I will count you in then, guys, and we will do 100 seconds of DRS in 3, 2, 1, begin.
Craig, the best young driver in F1 is?
Oscar Piastri.
What's your favorite restaurant?
Ooh. Runza.
First poster you had on your bedroom wall?
It was definitely John Milner's 1932 Ford 5-window coupe from American Graffiti.
Wow. Favorite F1 track?
Spa.
A great answer. Is it GIF or JIF?
GIF.
Yes. Mario or Luigi?
Luigi.
If you could add a James Bond type gadget to an F1 car, what would it be?
Smoke screens, for sure.
What is your favorite memory so far of F1?
I was video conferencing with a friend watching Abu Dhabi 2021.
Oh, no. We'll come back to that. Best F1 driver of all time, in your opinion?
Ayrton Senna. Minus the whole dating a 15-year-old.
Best thing to do on a rainy day?
Eat chili and cinnamon rolls.
There you go. Those are great foods. What's your favorite food? Is it one of those two?
No, I'm a sucker for prime rib.
Wet race or dry race?
Wet.
What is it about F1 you enjoy the most?
The speed.
Mustache or mullet?
Both?
Yes. That is correct. What's your favorite non-F1 sport?
College football.
And Nebraska's your favorite team?
Yes, sir.
Rob, there's a question that I don't have on the thing.
Till the day that I die.
Cable.
And that's time, because Brian inserted the extra one.
Great job, Craig. Great job. I'm sorry, Rob. Now you're going to have to, next time for the second 100 episodes, you'll have to have a question on there. So Nebraska's your favorite team? Oh, man. So we had one awesome. We were going to revisit, and now I was so busy on trying to ask questions quickly that I forgot. What was it, Rob? I made a comment about it. Craig, do you remember?
Yeah, I was video conferencing with my buddy watching Abu Dhabi 2021. We had been kind of chatting all throughout 2021, just like watching, because it was so exciting throughout that whole season.
Yeah.
And we were like trying to like get together early one morning to just like video chat and watch a race together, and like towards the end of the season we were just like, hey, let's just like get together and watch a race, and we just so happened to pick the last race of the season, and we were just like, what's gonna happen now? what's gonna happen? So We almost started a podcast after that, but couldn't quite make it happen.
Wow.
That was our first episode.
That was our first one. So we did. I had a lot of friends who had not watched Formula One before. And during COVID, it reignited my flames of passion for Formula One. And then I love Drive to Survive. So I got some of my friends into Drive to Survive during COVID in the 2020s, but really into 2021 when the Lion Kings and other things had kind of, or not Lion Kings,
Tiger Kings.
Tiger Kings and all those things, had Squid Games had all gone, and it was time to get back into sports. I got people on F1, and a lot of them watched the first time Abu Dhabi because of the hype. Winner takes all, and this, that, and the other. And then they were texting me, is this how it normally goes? I'm like, no. Sorry about that.
Yeah. Quick question for you here, and this is in no way, because you know we don't like to gatekeep on this here pod, but I am always interested, when you find a sport within the last couple of years, and you mentioned Ayrton Senna was your favorite driver, how much have you kind of dived back into... There's so much on the calendar these days. It feels like when I was growing up, there was only say, I don't know, whatever it was, 12, 14 races on the calendar. So there was the big void of nothingness where you could go back and watch some old stuff. These days, there's so much wall-to-wall F1. Are you managing to go back and kind of watch some older stuff and dive into that?
So it was just in the past year, in the past 18 months or so, that I signed up for F1 TV. And so I could get the... So now when I'm exercising in the morning, I'm watching some of the 10-minute highlights of every race from some of those older seasons. So that's how I'm getting back to watching some of those older highlights of older seasons and stuff. And I ended up going back and watching all of the 2009 season before I watched the Braun documentary just recently. So I kind of had a good idea of everything that was happening before I went and watched the documentary.
That's awesome.
That's awesome.
I love that.
It actually, you just gave me an idea, and I hope you did for all the listeners. I just started running again. I torn my calf muscle, and it's cold now, so I'm inside. And so what I did last winter was I would watch something dumb on YouTube on mute, and I'd have music going in my headphones because it's early in the morning and my kids are sleeping, my wife's sleeping. But why don't I want? I have F1 TV. Why am I not watching F1 TV? Like, you changed my life starting tomorrow morning, Greg. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah.
I shall do that.
Because I always wonder, because people come into sports at different points. We sometimes will make, especially when Paul is on, because Paul's kind of been in the sport for so long, and some of the teams that he's worked with or talks about, I'm like, half of our demographic probably have got no clue what Paul's talking about. And I kind of hope that develops an interest that people will go and look back. I was so glad when they did that Braun documentary, because when we'd only just started the pod and we'd had Paul on, and we did a whole episode on the Braun season, and it's just such a cool story that deserves the movie as well now, not just the TV series.
Yeah, the thing that has been kind of the most striking about going back and watching some of those older seasons is, having gotten into F1 very recently, is going back and watching these races and there's no halo. You're like, yeah. you kind of like, I knew what an F1 car looked like before the halo, but it looks strange sometimes seeing those older cars without a halo now. Like,
and if you go back to the late 90s or early 2000s, don't they look so much smaller?
They look tiny. They look like toy cars.
I mean, some of them, it feels like, as well, the wheels, the tires are as large as the chassis itself. Like, there's the same height, and then there's a wing. And it's so different, and the sound as well. But anyway, so Craig, you are an absolute prince. Thanks for coming on and doing this. It's been an absolute pleasure meeting you. And any other Dirty Siders like Craig who want to do the 100 seconds of DRS, give us a shout at dirtysideofthetrack@gmail.com. And we will set it up. Craig, thank you so very much for doing this, man.
Thanks for having me. Anybody who wants to do it, do it. Do it, do it. Do it, do it, do it.
Thank you.
Box, box.
Craig, thanks so much. We appreciate you joining us. That was awesome. If anyone wants to do the 100 seconds of DRS with us, please let us know either on Twitter or on Instagram, which is where I think you guys connected, or on email at dirtysideofthetrack@gmail.com. Yes, Rob Vail.
A little teaser that we shared with Craig after we'd finished recording is that there is going to be a slight revision to the format next season as well. So when we move into season 3 of the Dirty Side, 100 seconds is getting a little bit of a shake up. We're going to revamp it. We're going to introduce also a quiz element to folk that come on. So we're going to have like a listener section. We are going to start with the 100 seconds of DRS with all new questions. Well, no, maybe not all new questions. There's some in there we can't get rid of, but
some new questions.
Going to introduce with 100 seconds of DRS. That'll give us something to talk to you folk about in terms of some of the answers that maybe you've given. And then at the end, there will be Who Wants to Be a Dirty Cider, which will be the biggest, best quiz in the world and not ripped off from Millionaire at all in the slightest.
Nope.
Where the prize, grand prize, and what a prize it is that the winner will come on and be a guest host with me and Brian for an episode of The Winner's Choosing to come on and be with us. So, and there might be some merch thrown in there. We haven't decided yet, but new format is coming. If you've been on DRS before, the gates are wide open. You can reapply. It doesn't matter if you've been on DRS before, because it's going to be new questions, new format, new season.
And so
as a great plug, Brian,
I loved it. As we close, I'm going to turn to these four guys and see if they have anything they want to plug, because I know a lot of you have things that you may want to highlight. So Rob Reed, I know you've got a large presence in various places, but I'm going to start with Lee, because I know Lee, you stream a lot of games, and is there a way people can follow you and where they should do that? And as a Nimrod, think of anything you'd want to highlight. And if you don't want to highlight anything in particular, just make fun of Vale. So Lee, back to you, sir. Your turn.
Yeah, like Brian says, I do a lot of streaming on Twitch. Follow me on twitch.tv at insanely13. I'm also on YouTube as well, on the same, at insanely13.
Awesome. We'll tag you in the show notes
as well for anyone that wants to find Lee.
Mr. Reed, anything you'd want all the listeners to follow you on or know about?
Yeah, just the Forbes column. You know, look on Forbes.com or search for Forbes Rob Reed and you'll come up with my column.
Thank you.
Still haven't read an article on there yet about like best podcasts in Formula One.
He's talked about us twice. What are you talking about?
I haven't had a whole episode, a whole article dedicated to us, Brian.
I have that one. I also, the story that I'm working on in my head right now is basically why Americans should be fans of McLaren. I'm going to make a compelling case, like as the new America, as Americans are being introduced to the sport through Drive to Survive, they have this, you know, choice to make, like, who am I going to be a fan of? I'm coming into the sport for the first time. And I would argue that McLaren makes the most sense for Americans, partly because of Zach Brown, partly because of the history of the team.
If you're ever looking for a Andretti financing story, I have all the background in my head. We could talk offline.
All right. Yeah.
As a Nimrod, now feel free to highlight anything you'd like, or like I said, just rip into Vale.
I have two highlights. One, I think, for the season, and one for this particular episode. For the season is Oscar Piastri's mum's tweet.
I think
that's something that deserved more time on this podcast and we didn't get to speak about. The second one is that we really underappreciate Rob Vale's mathematical skills. I mean, if we wind back to right to the beginning of this podcast, when he said that every trilogy has a third part, and I think I'm still taking it on. I'm hoping I'll get the book on it and see where it takes me.
Nimrod, anything you'd like to add, sir?
I'm not sure if I'm pleased or disappointed that there wasn't a bold statement for next year, considering how long we were.
Keep your powder dry. We will be doing a pre-season at some point, so you get ready to make some bold predictions.
Maybe I have time to make my claim even bolder.
You're going to have to go some way to be more wrong than you were this time around.
I didn't say more wrong, I said more bold.
Well, that's one and the same.
True.
So with that, I just want to thank
the wheel of an F1 car.
you guys are all great. Lee, thank you. Nimrod, thank you. Az, thank you. And Rob, thank you. This was a lot of fun. You guys are all the best. And it made hanging out with Vale tolerable for me for the last hour. So thank you so much. Like we said, next week, I previewed briefly, it's the Dirty Side Awards, also known as the Dirties. We will be dressed up with trophies, or we'll just be in T-shirts like normal. Who knows, one or the other.
I think we should roll out the tuxes again like we did for the 100th episode, I think. Because it's the biggest award show of the year. Keep your eyes peeled on Twitter and Threads, because we will be doing two sets of awards. There will be awards given out by myself and Brian, and there are going to be four awards given out decided by listener votes. So there'll be four polls coming out between now and next week. Keep an eye out, vote for them, share them with your friends, make your friends vote in them, because this is going to be the biggest award show of the year. Fact.
It'll definitely be better than prize giving.
Well, we're not going to have
not
as much cringiness on our version, I don't think. So we'll see. A nice, well said lead. Everyone, thank you so much for listening. As always, we hope you have a wonderful holiday season. Be safe, be healthy, have some fun, unplug, and we will talk to you all in a week's time.